Welcome to The Secret to Successful Development Projects, a podcast series from Muckle LLP. In this series, we'll look at how to get set for success as we tackle the key things you need to get right on a development project in bite-sized chunks. You can find out more about what we'll be covering at muckle-llp.com/development-success. This time around, we're looking at public procurement frameworks.
Hi, I'm Alison Walton. I'm a partner and head of procurement at Muckle LLP. I advise both public and private sector clients on compliance with the procurement regime in relation specifically to development projects from urban regeneration to retrofit and public-private joint ventures. I led the procurement advice for the first phase of residential development at the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park in London following the 2012 Games, and I also advised Faraday Developments on their landmark win against West Berkshire Council in relation to the first ever declaration of ineffectiveness, which was in the English courts. Now, I'm joined today by Jonathan Parker of Pagabo, a framework provider specifically for developer-led projects. And he'll talk us through the various frameworks they have to offer, and if you're a developer or a contractor, how you can get on involved in those frameworks to provide to the public sector. Now, before we go into that, just a quick recap of what a framework is. They're very often used by public sector bodies and procured in line with the Find a Tender Service and the procurement regulations. They are a sort of an overarching agreement which sets out the terms and the prices which will be applied whenever a public sector body wants to call off works or services. So that there is an existing agreement and sort of parcels of work are drawn down as and when they're required. These can be set up by procurement hubs, which the frameworks can then be called off by various public sector authorities who are entitled to use them. And that's the type of framework that Jonathan's going to tell us about now. Hi, Jonathan.
Thanks, Alison. Hi, Alison. Thanks for that. So I'm John Parker. So I'm National Framework Manager for Pagabo. And we obviously my role within Pagabo is I lead on all construction frameworks. So I manage and responsible for basically frameworks starting at £250,000 up to no limit. And we've got a suite of frameworks. So as Alison mentioned, that you know every single framework that we have is set up with a contracting authority. So what Pagabo does is we've got begun through the procure process based upon a need and a want to set the frameworks up. So every framework we have has a hosting authority, and my role within that is to make sure that compliance with the framework, what goes through the advice, but also to keep those contracting authorities basically in the loop of what's coming through so we don't breach any OGU rules, any headline limits, things like that really. So what we've got within Pagabo is we've got a whole suite of different frameworks. So Pagabo as an entity, is a trading name basically. We are a company called Added Value Portal. So when clients look to see about a framework as an alternative to a full OGU or full find the tender sort of process, we recommend that you go through a bit of a due diligence on the framework company itself to make sure that they're financially strong. So we basically refer to people back to our accounts, the Added Value Portal. We share lots of different compliant documents. But Pagabo as a framework provider has a number of different frameworks. So our overall offering is about offering a service to the public sector. So as Alison mentioned, every single public sector body can utilise Pagabo's frameworks. And what it allows them to do is get a overall service from us so we can offer procurement advice, we can help shape the tender, we can even write the tender, expression of interest tender, run it through our portal. So it's a very much a cradle to grave scenario where we become a procurement arm for that client. And we look at the longer term relationship with that client. We've got numerous of them across the country. But what we've got is a suite of frameworks below that. So we've got normal construction design and build frameworks. We've got, which you can allow direct awards, single stage, two stage processes. And that's from building contracts from £250,000 up to no limit across three different frameworks. We've got a refit and refurb framework, which is a specialist solution there. And we've also got a professional services framework. But the framework, obviously, that Alison likes to talk about today is the developer-led framework. Now, this framework is quite unique in the market, and it's only one of its kind that offers the detail of how the framework works. So when you've got a framework, and my role is help to set up these frameworks to look at what's going to work in the industry. Now, the developer-led framework was in basically has been in development 2 years before it went live last December. And it all came from conversations dealing with local authorities and public sector bodies about developments, usually selling a plot of land on the land sale, but then not having that control of that build element. Things being built out when the developer wanted to, and not have that collaboration through the program and sharing revenue. So what we did a huge amount of engagement with the local authorities, public sector bodies, and also developers. So what we've done is shape the framework to drive value for the public sector client. And how we've shaped that is we've offered a number of different things we put into the framework about assistance and benefits of using the framework, even wrapped up in development agreements that the clients can utilize off the shelf if they want to. But the whole basis of the framework was driving down into the funding mechanism, the sector or scope of the scheme, the value, and also the geographical split. And what we did is through that engagement with the market, we did a huge piece. So when we did and went out for the full ODU to get all the right developers on the framework, we had a huge amount of people bidding for the scheme because we knew we were trying to drive the value and get the right people on the framework. So the sectors on the framework is split in such a way that it drives value for the client. So, you know, we're down to the funding mechanism. So we've got in lot one, we've got special purpose vehicles and LLPs. So you can set up an agreement for the longer term, 10, 15, 20 years with the housing authority or the contracting authority or public sector body. And then in lot two, we've got lease back and income lease models. So ideally for your car parks, your student accommodation, and even for NHS non-call services as well, which is going through the framework. And then lot three, we've got single site and multi-site developments through a program. And that's through there. And we've also got developer management services in lot three as well. So we've covered all aspects to get the right people on the framework. And we've structured it in such a way that we've got a number of different developers. So split by, gets quite complicated now, but I've split by funding mechanism, value, sector, and regional area. We've got 9 developers on the framework. So we've got 29 developers across the framework, and it's split down by different sub-categories. So does that give you a bit of an outline of what we do, how we go about it?
It does, yes, thank you. And so which public sector bodies can use the framework, can call off from the framework?
Every single one. So we've detailed that, so local authorities, NHS trusts, higher education, further education, central body government, we've got charities. Every single public sector body that receives funding from the public sector can access the framework, and we've detailed it out in the PIN and the ODU notice. And we've obviously been through the compliance checks by government bodies. You know, every single client that will utilise the framework will do their own due diligence and look back at the original tender, look back at the original T's and C's, the ODU, the PIN notice for approval, basically. And we have got central body government agencies looking and utilising the framework currently. So, yeah, every single framework we've got has all been squeaky clean checked by every single client we use. And when we run further competitions and clients, we've had no challenge whatsoever on any framework we've done by being let them or any further competition through the framework. So compliance is key for us.
Yeah, that's reassuring. And so if a public sector body wanted to call off from a framework, what would be the process for them? Do they direct award? Do they choose the developer they want? Do they run a mini competition? How does that all work? What's the process?
So the process is very fluid, really. So we've got a number of different avenues that the client can use, but the first process that the client needs to address is the client access agreement. And now that's a non-cost, non-legislative process. Well, it's a legislative process, but it's a non-cost, non-committal process. It just means that they're accessing into the framework, and then we share all the T's and C's and everything. But once we get into discussions with the client, they've got a number of different routes about how to access basically the procurement. What we work on the basis, there's one size doesn't fit all. So every single, especially on development front, every single project to be different. And what we try and do is advise the client on the best way to shape that procurement to drive value for them. So you've got a number of different things, as you mentioned, Alison, direct award. So you can utilize a number of different developers on the framework under direct award. Usually with a client, it's looking, there'll be a specific need or a want or an existing relationship so that you can use the framework as a mechanism. But usually as a first port of call, a local authority or a public sector body will utilise a further competition for their governance. But what we do is dependent on how that scheme is shaped currently or what work's being carried out, we would shape that further competition process to drive value for the client. So they're not having to shoehorn in what their project requirements are into what we deem as a two-stage or a single-stage process. We shape the procurement of what we ask, how we go about it, the commercial, the quality aspects to drive value for them. And we wrap a number of different things into that, you know, social value, if it needs to be zero carbon, sustainability, absolutely everything. And dependent where that scheme is across the development, we can ask a number of different things to on both aspects, really.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you. And if I'm a contractor or a developer listening to this podcast and thinking I want to get involved, this sounds great access to the market for my services or my works, what can I do as a contractor to get involved?
So what we do, a framework house is all point in time. So it's not a roll on, roll off sort of scenario, which is a dynamic purchasing system, which we've got one of those up to £1 million already. But what a framework is set, we're set with those number of developers and contractors for that period of time as that framework's live. But what we do is when we re-let the framework and we go for renewals, like we've got one that we'll be re-letting for January 2023 for our medium works. We'll start that engagement in Q2, maybe back end of Q1, Q2 next year, about notifying the industry, what's going through, how we work it, what we're looking for, benefits of. So we start that process. But ultimately, yeah, the developers are on that framework for that period of time. So when you look at driving benefits and everything else, when you're going for a development, for example, you've only got a limited number of routes. Once that scheme has an element of any public funding, so if it's a land sale, obviously it's exempt and that's fine. But if it's anything from government funding, from, you know, towns fund funding that's been put into the pot, the local authority or public sector body has to justify a PCR, find the tender procured route for compliance. If they don't, then they're going to be audited by the government and asked questions on that, and it leaves them open to legal challenge, such as the Faraday case. So the wrapper of the framework covers all that compliance off them already. But we are got the developers on that period of time for that framework. Now, that framework is a 4+1+1, so it's a 6-year timescale. So more than likely, it'll run for that course. The only way that we'd cease it early or not take each year extension is if we've got a number of developers who aren't trading anymore, or for any reason we go to potentially breaching the OGU limit of the framework, which obviously I review with the contracting hosting authority. But you know, the only, in effect, to be completely honest, the only downside to a framework of what it provides is the developers on the framework. And what I mean by that is that we've got a fixed panel of people on there. So we can't add people into it, you know, or anything like that, geographical region. These are the ones we run a further competition. Those are the developers we utilize. And that's why we do such a lot of engagement up front to get the right developers who work in a collaborative, open fashion to get onto the framework, who will then obviously then run those further competitions and then, you know, deliver schemes.
Okay, thank you. And in terms of the process for running mini competitions and indeed entering into agreements with the developers on the framework, I suppose I've got two questions. The first is, how are the authorities who call off bound by certain evaluation criteria? And secondly, are they bound by certain kind of template documents that are set out in the framework agreement? How much leeway is there?
Okay, so within the evaluation, the framework is set upon a 60-40 split in favour of quality. But what we've written into the contract and T's and C's, you know, to make it fully to PCR transparent, well, compliant, is about transparency and collaboration. What we've done is factored in a 20% leeway either way. So the client, the hosting or the public sector body, can utilise a up to 80% quality down to 20% price, which you do on a regular basis, or down to 40 on quality up to 60 price. So we've got those boundaries in there. But when we look at specifics about what we ask for in that evaluation, that again is down to how that scheme is structured. So we drive social value really, really hard. And we've got our basically Loop, which is our social value tool. which is any scheme that goes through our Pagava frameworks, the developers and clients get free access into that system. So we can then monitor, track, and drive social value through the further competition. But we're within those parameters, but we flex what we ask by question or quality aspects within those boundaries, in effect. Now, the other aspect of the framework of running a further competition, the process is quite streamlined. So, you've got a client access agreement, and then how it works is that the documentation, we've got a number of different documentations within there, like templates for the further comps. But what we do is we get involved very early on. So we do how we engage with those developers. First off, we'll do on schemes, do engagement sessions. So the client would sit down, engage with the developers, give them a heads up of what the scheme's all about, the timings, where the scheme's up to. So then the developers can then look at the scheme, do some homework, do some due diligence. So when we have the formal process of an expression of interest come out, they're fully aware of what the scheme's all about. So their due diligence process is speeded up. And then once we come back with finite numbers of who's interested to bid the scheme, then we move on to the further competition. In the background, we'll be working on the documentation, the ITT, and we've got templates that we can adapt project by project basis for the client to run the competition. If the client's got a team already and they've got a PM, a QS who've got their documents ready to go or they want to work on it, they're still free to do that and use their own documentation. I would just need to review that documentation before it's released to the developers to make sure it's compliant with the framework. And then, other things like development agreements. We've engaged with a legal firm to then formulate those legal agreements. So they can be called off. We call it basically their unamended or vanilla form. So they can be adapted project by project basis. It just speeds up the process for the client having those standard documents as a template to utilize. If they've got their own T's and C's and their own agreements, they can utilize those through the further competitions as well. It just means that we've tried to put as much as we can in to expedite the process as much as possible.
Brilliant, thank you. That's really interesting. It certainly gives food for thought and can make things clearly much more straightforward and time efficient when it comes to procurement for authorities and for the developers who run those frameworks as well. Yeah. Thank you very much for that. I'd like to thank you, John, for joining us today. And I hope you'll join us again soon for another episode.
Thanks, Alison. Much appreciated.
You've been listening to The Secret to Successful Development Projects, a podcast series from Muckle LLP. You can find out more at muckle-llp.com/development-success.